So I am really, really excited, though, about these next 4 weeks. And I'm really serious. I really hope you'll be here with us because, these talks that we're going to be having these next 4 weeks are talks that have, we've seen really be used by God in some pretty spectacular ways. And now we've been very intentional about opening up the vault and looking back in time. We've been very intentional. And all the talks, I have to say, I think fit perfectly for where we're at in our season here at the Orchard. And so I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to seeing what God does in our hearts. Now, the video you saw, this video here just a minute ago, this was from a series we did a little over 2 years ago called Inked. How many of you were here for that series? Raise your hand. Oh, a bunch of you were, a bunch of you were not. So, it was a series, it was actually a really fun series that, as you may have guessed, was a little bit about tattoos. In fact, just out of curiosity, how many of you have a tattoo? Would you raise your hand? Let me see here. Raise your hand real high. Okay, well, now go ahead and just show your tattoo to the person. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. No. Don't do it. Oh, wow. Some of you are like, all right. No, whoa. Wait a minute here. Oh, wow. And I don't know if I'm positive I just saw this, but Mom, did you have your hand raised just then? Because I know my mom doesn't have it. Either that or I don't know my mom. I'll guarantee you that, right? So anyway, so I say that it was just a little bit about tattoos because really, more than that, it was a series about the stories behind our tattoos, right? Chances are, if you have a tattoo, there's a story behind it, and then even more specifically, really, it's a story that has to do with a relationship, right? Most tattoos, they tell a story, and most of the stories are about relationships of some sort. You know, for example, during that series, I actually got a tattoo. That's right, I got a tattoo. And in fact, you want to hear something funny about that? So the other day, I was sitting in Starbucks, and a Christian woman came in who knew me. She doesn't go to church here. And she said, and she knew who I was. She knew I was a pastor. She said, "Oh, you got a tattoo." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh, you must have gotten that before you came to know the Lord." Oh, I love it. 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 Woo. So, you know, so I was just like, yeah, pretty much. Oh, man. Now I'm going to try to lead you to the Lord. Okay. No, anyway. So I got a tattoo, and I got a tattoo in honor of my dad. Many of you know my dad passed away in 2004, my dad was real into elephants, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's because he was kind of diehard Republican or what, but he was real into elephants, so I wanted to get a tattoo in memory and honor of him, and so I went, and I found a great artist and got a tattoo. I think we have some pictures, right? See, my wife just looks way too happy here. You know what I mean? This was like the greatest day of her life. All right, and it did hurt, I must say. And anyway, so I got this tattoo, and I think we got a picture, up close one, right? Yeah, here we go. So that's like right after I got it. It's kind of peely right there, but it's kind of hard to see it. But there's actually three elephant heads. It's kind of a tribal design, and each one of those heads represents three generations. My dad. And then myself and my son Alex, and so it's something that really represents a lot more than just ink that has been put, into my skin. It really represents a relationship that's very important to me. And chances are, for many of you who've got tattoos, either it represents a relationship that is important, or maybe used to be, and so you're trying to figure out how do I change that name, right? Like, it used to say Sally, now it's like Penny or something, you know? So this series really became a lot about relationships. And so as we journeyed through this series, one of the talks that I gave during the series was a talk where I shared and discussed what I believe are two of the most powerful words in the English language. Two of the most powerful words in the English language. Now, a lot of people would think that the most powerful words in the English language are these two words right here, what and if. right? A lot of people would say that has to be the two most powerful words. What if, right? Because if you think about it, I mean, there's no question about it. Those two words have given birth to, I mean, you know, countless numbers of ideas and innovative inventions and solutions and those kind of things. I mean, really, everything that's ever been invented started with those words, right? What if, right? Someone sits around, they see a bird flying through the air. What if we could fly like that? Oh, you know, what if there was a way that we could connect with people around the world, like instantaneously, no matter where we're at? That'd be so cool. What if? Right, powerful words. But I don't think they are the most powerful words. No. I would suggest that there are two even more powerful words than those, and I would say that they are these words right here. Ready? Yes and no. That's right. Yes and no. Say it with me. Ready? Yes and no. Right? Yes and no. I think that yes and no are probably two of the most powerful words in, not just in, you know, the English language, but in whatever language and whatever they might be, in every language, right? Think about how many times a day you say those words, right? Would you like cream in your coffee? No. Okay, well, honey, do you know where my keys are? No. Right? Dad, can I play outside? Yes, please, go. Right? Would you like a free upgrade with your rental car? Yes, that'd be great. Yep. Will you marry me? Right. Yes and no. Powerful, powerful words. And the reason those words are so powerful is because if you think about those two words, yes and no, those two words end up defining a ton about our lives, don't they? I mean, those two words, yes and no, they define what we do, they define where we go, they define how we do things, they define who we're in relationship with, they define us. And yet, as important as those words are, you know as well as I do, we all probably have a tendency to be pretty casual with those words, don't we? Yeah, we tend to use those words in a lot more casual way than we ought a lot of times. I mean, have you ever been too casual with your yes? You ever been too casual with your no? Usually it's more casual with the yes, right? I mean, sometimes we say the word yes when we really ought to say no, right? Yeah. Hey, can I get you to commit to this thing? And we're going, yes. Ah, what did I do? And you walk away going, I shouldn't have done that, right? Hey, would you buy this for me? Hey, can I get you to lead this thing? Hey, you know, would you be able to watch my ADD, hyperactive, insomniac quadruplets for me while I go to Hawaii for 9 months, huh? Right? It's like what happens is it's like we want to say no, but what happens is our lips, they get hijacked. And it's like we our yes like slips out faster than no. It becomes a real problem for us. Well, Jesus once talked about these two words in Matthew chapter 5. I want to take you there this morning. Matthew chapter 5. Matthew is the first book of the New Testament. And Jesus says something very, very pointed, very direct about these two words, yes and no. Now, just sort of set the scene before we go there, okay? What's happening here is Jesus is talking to a group of religious people who are having a problem with these words. And what's actually happening is they are breaking their vows. They are not keeping their promises. And they weren't following through on what they said they would do. And so Jesus comes along and he basically says, okay, enough is enough. Here's what I want you to know. And he says this, Matthew 5, verse 37. Let's read it together. Ready? Let your yes be simply yes, and your no be simply no. Anything more than that comes from the evil one. Jesus says, let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. Pretty straight to the point, huh? Very, very direct statement by Jesus, very black and white. Jesus says, let your yes be yes, let your no be no. Now, of course, you've got to understand that this was not, you know, just some kind of like, you know, mantra that Jesus was saying, like, this is a good thing to know. No. Listen, Jesus understood this. I mean, Jesus, he lived this in his life. He understood the power of yes, and he understood the power of no. I mean, think about this for a second. Jesus knew when to say yes, even when that meant his death on a cross, right? Jesus knew when to say yes. He said yes to becoming human. He said yes to pouring out love and hope and healing and forgiveness. He said yes to being a servant. He said yes to compassion, grace, mercy. See, Jesus, he knew when to say yes. But you know what that also means? Is it means that he also knew when to say no. That's right. I mean, part of what allowed Jesus to know when to say yes was he knew when to say no. I mean, think about that. Jesus knew to say no to what? Things like temptation, distractions, right? Things like pressure. And as a result, Jesus had this, I think, this great sense of clarity as to why he was here. Jesus, I don't think, was walking around, confused about why he was here. I mean, you don't die for something if you're confused. You have a deep conviction about it, right? If you're going to die for something, you are going to have a deep conviction about it. You're going to be clear about it. And because Jesus was clear, he had a tremendous sense of purpose and mission in his life. He knew why he was here, which enabled him to know what things to say yes to, what things to say no to. So how about us? What does that mean for us? Well, I tell you what, you know as well as I do that there's any area of our lives that we need to know when to say yes to and when we need to say no to. Any area of our lives that this really applies to, it's in the area of our relationships. Right? In the area of our relationships. And really what we're talking about are these things called boundaries. Say that word with me. Boundaries, right? Have you ever had someone tell you need boundaries in your life? Or have you ever told yourself, I need boundaries in my life? Well, we all understand boundaries. At least we understand the concept of boundaries, right? I mean, for example, you've got where you live, there's probably boundaries, right? I mean, you've got in your property, there's a fence or, I don't know, a wall or a moat with alligators. I don't know, or whatever else, right? And these boundaries are all saying the exact same thing. What are they saying? They're saying, okay, this is where my property begins, and this is where my property ends, right? This is where it begins, this is where it ends, and at the end of the day, I am responsible for whatever happens in between these boundaries, right? I'm responsible for whatever happens in between these two points. I am responsible. Turn to the person next to you and say, I'm responsible. Oh, yes. You all sound so convinced that you're responsible, right? Do you see how we embrace responsibility in our culture? Right? I'm responsible. I'm responsible. I'm responsible. See these boundaries? Okay, so these boundaries, they identify those what we're responsible for. And you know what? Relational boundaries work the exact same way. They identify our personal boundary lines, what I am responsible for and what I am not responsible for in our relationships. And see, this is a huge topic because here's the deal. People who understand boundaries understand a couple of things. They understand, first of all, that this whole concept and idea of one life to live is a lot more than just a soap opera, right? They understand one life to live is like, that is reality, right? You don't get to do it again. This is it. This is your chance to live your life. And they understand, okay, they understand that we truly do have one life to live and, okay, that one day when you and I die, when we breathe our last breath on planet Earth, that we will stand before God and we'll give an account for that one life. We'll give an account for it. People have boundaries. They understand that. But they also understand that your job, my job in life, is to live a life that pleases God, right? That pleases God. At the end of the day, man, I want my life to be about pleasing God and then, of course, just radically loving people, right? Loving the daylights out of people. But it's really about pleasing God. Well, the problem comes in when we get that mixed up, right? The problem comes in when we start to think that it's our job to please everyone around us, right? I mean, that's where we start having problems, right? When we start thinking that our job is, yeah, maybe it's about pleasing God, but it's also about pleasing everybody around us. Leads us into some trouble, right? Because here's the thing. After a while, what happens if a person does not have a clear sense of who they are or who God created them to be, what he's called them to do with these boundaries in their lives, you know what's going to happen? Eventually, they're going to become overcommitted. They're going to end up exhausted and tired and self-absorbed and resentful. And then on top of all that, they're going to feel guilty about it. Right? And when that happens, You know what we do, man? Not only do we damage ourselves, we end up damaging other people around us. We damage. We bring damage. And ultimately, worse than any of that, we miss out on becoming the people God created us to be. So let's talk about these boundaries for a minute. Now, there are typically two types of people, and maybe I shouldn't say it that way, because I don't want to cast labels on anybody, okay? So there are typically two types of boundary problems, there we go, that people have. Okay, and in fact, almost everybody falls into one or two of these categories, okay? Either they are known as a compliant or they're known as a controller. All right, now the compliant, let's talk about the compliant for a minute. The compliant is basically the person who has a really hard time saying no. And so what happens is oftentimes a compliant person says yes, even though they really wanted to say no. And as a result, they end up committing themselves to all kinds of things, to tasks, to, you know, projects and events and relationships and on down the list, things that they really didn't want to be committed to, but they did commit to, all because they didn't want to hurt someone else's feelings, right? Or because they wanted to be liked. They didn't want someone not to like them, right? Or a number of other reasons. And so they just have a really hard time getting the word no out of their mouths. Now, one of the things I love about the Orchard community is that this is a very authentic place. We tell the truth here, we're honest. You know, I in the one or two at the most areas that I might be struggling with in my life, I'm gonna be honest about those, right? And so you're gonna be honest. So here's a question. How many of you, okay, because you're part of an honest community here, we're gonna love you anyway, right? How many of you would say you have a tendency to lean towards being the compliant person? You have a hard time saying no. Raise your hand real high. Don't be ashamed. Come on now, raise your hand. Look around. These are the compliants, right? Now what's cool is they would sit here for the entire day and do this if I asked them to. In fact, I could probably get them to stand, like, stand up and dance around like Napoleon Dynamite, or I'm going to be mad at you. Okay, I'm going to do it, right? Because they're compliant people. Well, then you have, on the other end of the spectrum, you have what's known as a controller. Now, you wonder something funny last night? I kid you not, when I said, and then you also have the controller, there was one lady sitting out here in the audience who goes like this. And she points to her husband. She didn't look at him. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, she goes. And I was like, oh, gosh, what do I say about this? I can't say anything. And he didn't even know, you know? So anyway, some of you are sitting next to the controller, and you're like, Or some of you guys, you know, you got like this pain in your side right now because your wife, she's like, right? Or some of you wives, you got, right? I mean, no, our wives are never trying to be controlling. Anyway, so what was I saying? We got the controller. Okay, so here's the thing. All right, now here's the difference between the two, okay? If the compliant person says, you know, or has a hard time saying no, right? The compliant has a hard time saying no. The controller on the other hand has a hard time hearing the word no, right? The compliant can't say no. The controller has a hard time hearing the word no, right? In fact, when someone says no to a controller, they don't hear no. They hear maybe, right? Maybe, right? Or worse yet, if they hear maybe, you know what they actually hear? They actually hear a yes. John Ortberg, he's always got good things to say about this whole topic. He once said this: what happens when a peace-loving compliant meets an insensitive controller? They get married, right? And unfortunately, over time, if some very solid boundaries are not developed and established, it can become one tough relationship, right? Become really, really tough, because the truth is, whatever category you fall in, whether you are a compliant, whether you're a controller, both sides have a real tendency to cause an awful lot of damage, potential to cause a lot of damage. And so boundaries is a huge issue, and can I tell you, one area of our life that boundaries are a huge issue in is in the area of our friendships. Let's talk about friendships, for example. Friendships can be really funky sometimes, can't they? Don't look at me like that. You know it's true, right? It's true. Friendships are a funny thing. Right? In fact, you ever notice how there's different types of friendships in our lives, right? You have different types of friends. I have different types of friends. Like, we all know what it's like to have what we could refer to as those draining friendships. You know what I'm talking about, right? That is, by the way, that is not called a relationship. I call that a relationship. Leech, re-leeching, okay. Right? Because you know what? They're like leeches, right? They just suck the life out of you. Like, you feel dehydrated after being around them, right? They drain you. They suck the life out of you. And then on top of the worst part is, like, we're Christians, right? So we have to, like, love this person, which is good. But what's not good is when you end up spending way too much time with them, right? And so how many of you, by the way, you know how to get rid of leeches, right? You burn them off. No, okay, I'm kidding. Let's move on. All right. So you've got the draining friendships. Then you've got the neutral friendships. And these are actually pretty good friendships because these are the type of friendships that sort of have that give and take element to them, right? It's like this rhythm of give and take, right? It's neutral. But then you have those friendships that are, I think, like the best relationships. They're what I would call the replenishing friendships, right? I mean, they are the friendships that like when you are done hanging out with these people, you feel energized, right? You feel replenished. And here's the thing. So no matter what, maybe in your life, you know, and it's so, I think we probably ought to have all types of those types of friendships in our lives. It keeps us balanced. It's a good thing. But the problem comes in when we get out of balance, right? When all we have are the leeches, right? Or you know what I'm saying? And so the truth is, though, no matter what you have, we all want to have great friendships, right? Well, can I tell you something? I have some great friendships. But I've also had some really difficult friendships. And can I tell you what sets the great friendships apart from the not-so-great friendships? The great friendships are great because of the amount of work that's been put into them to make them great. The tough conversations, right? The confrontations about things that are very uncomfortable, right? I was talking to someone last night, and this topic came up of how in leadership, I think what sets a good leader apart from a great leader is that last 10% of the conversation that we oftentimes don't want to have, right? We get like 90% there, and we get right to the verge of that uncomfortable moment of really saying what needs to be said, and we chicken out, right? It's that last 10%. And so I think when it comes to great friendships, man, it's a lot of work. It involves a lot of, and really a healthy amount of give and take, which means, though, that the other person has to have a great deal of clarity about what my boundaries are, and I have to have a great deal of clarity about what their boundaries are, so that we don't start trespassing on each other's property that doesn't belong to us, right? Or cause and get over into these boundary problems. And that's why, like, if you've ever been in a relationship or a friendship where you feel like you're the only one that's giving, huh? And it's like you make all the phone calls, you initiate all the contact, right? You're always the one driving the relationship to the degree that if you didn't do what you did, there would be no friendship. You know what I'm talking about? That is a sign or an example of a relationship that has a boundary problem. Same thing with a relationship where one person is incredibly needy. All right, you know what I'm talking about. All you hear is, I need. I. All about me, right? And no matter how much, oh, man. I'm like, my heart's beating as I'm thinking about this. No matter how much time and energy and emotion that you invest and you give that other person, you just know at the end of the day it's never going to be enough. Never enough. And yet at the same time, if you're a compliant person, you feel guilty for even thinking that, right? Yeah, you're sitting here right now. You actually don't even like me that I just said that, right? Yeah, but you don't like not like me that much because you don't want to be not liked by me. So, no, anyway, but you feel guilty. So see, that's why things like limitations are so important. Listen, limitations are so huge. Let me throw the statement up on the screens because I think this is something we all need to just like tattoo to the inside of our eyelids, right? Relationships have to have limitations because we are limited people. Let's say it together, ready? Relationships have to have limitations because we are limited people. I mean, there's only so much that you can give to another person. I mean, even our love, right? Even our love has limitations. Now, if you're someone who has boundary issues in your life, you need to read a book. It's called Boundaries. by Henry Cloud and John Townsend. In their book, they tell this, they use as an example, they make a great point about this story that is in the scriptures. It's a parable that Jesus once told. It's a parable of the Good Samaritan. Have you ever heard of that story? Yep, the Good Samaritan. Okay, so in case you haven't heard it, basically what happens is there's a man who is walking on the road. He ends up getting beaten and robbed, and he's left by the side of the road to die. Well, okay, the two religious dudes come by, and but because their boundaries are so rigid, and their boundaries are so strict, they do absolutely nothing, and they walk on by. Well, eventually this other man comes along, a Samaritan comes along, who was like probably the last person in the world who you'd think would help this person, but the guy's just moved with compassion, and so he stops and he bandages the guy up, takes him to this inn. There's this innkeeper there, and he walks into this inn and he goes like, "Yeah, I found this guy on the side of the road. I bandaged him up, but I got a business that I've got to run, so I got to take off, and so I want you to, if you would, take care of this guy, and I will reimburse you for whatever it costs," and he leaves. And so, you know, Jesus, he tells a story, he says, "This is a great story, you know, and a lot of great lessons here, and all of that." Well, think for a second, what would have happened if that story would have taken a little bit of a different twist? All right, imagine Jesus telling the story, and right when he gets to this part about this guy, who he drops the guy off at the inn, okay, he drops him off, and, you know, his BlackBerry's going off, he's got to get back, take care of the business that he's running, you know, and so right as he's getting ready to walk out the door, let's say the injured man, like, wakes up, looks around and sees him getting ready to walk out the door and says, "Hold on, wait, you're leaving? What are you doing, man? Are you serious? I mean, I'm laying here, I'm bleeding to death, man. I am in deep pain, okay? And you're worried about making money in your business? Jeez, you're selfish. What is wrong with you? Thanks for nothing." Right? Imagine that. And then imagine, like, the Samaritan man is, like, overcome with guilt over that. And so he's like, "Oh, geez, you're right. Oh, I suck. Okay, all right, you know what? I'm sorry, you're right. I could do more. So you know what? Okay, you know what? Here. Take my credit cards. I'll raise the limits on all of them to whatever you want, right? In fact, let me go, you know, forget my business, okay? I'll just stay here. I'm really sorry for being so selfish. I'm a jerk." But can you imagine that, right? Well, thankfully, the story doesn't go there, right? Instead, here's what you see. You see a great set of boundaries happening in this story. Now, I don't know if Jesus, like, meant to, like, I don't think Jesus was trying to make a point about boundaries here, but you see them nonetheless. I mean, you see that even in helping and loving people, even in reaching out and loving people, there still has to be boundaries. I mean, for example, the Samaritan, he takes the man to an inn. He doesn't have the guy move into his house, right? He pays for a few days of expenses, but he doesn't leave a blank check sitting there. Right? He's the Good Samaritan. He's not trying to be the gargantuan Samaritan. Right? He's the Good Samaritan. And so there are limits. And chances are that there are probably some of us here today who are in relationships where limits need to be set. And whether it's because you're the one who is always initiating being together and, you know, frankly, the other person just isn't as committed to the relationship as you are, Or maybe you're in a relationship with someone and every time you're together, the focus is always on them. It's always on their need, always on their issues. Can I tell you something? If you don't start talking about these things, and if you don't start defining your boundaries, listen, not only will you end up hurting yourself, you're going to end up hurting your friend. And if you really love this person, if they're really your friend, the best thing you can do is just go ahead and have that tough conversation and start working through these issues. I mean, look, because otherwise, what's going to happen? Well, that person's going to end up pushing everybody away from them in their lives. They're going to end up not having any friends, all because they're obsessed with themselves. Someone needs to say, "Now that's good preaching, Hodge." I mean, but you're looking at me like maybe you're that person. All of you. No, I know you're not. So, you know what? Be a friend to them. Be a friend. Speak truth into their lives. And on the other hand, some of you, your boundaries might be too rigid, right? And maybe you've been holding back when you should be giving and serving and saying yes more often. You know, perhaps your friendship with a certain person is a friendship of convenience. Maybe your dating relationship is with some people are relationships of convenience. And you know that you know that you know that you would never. You're kidding me? Would you marry that person? No way. But sometimes I just get lonely. Listen, if that's the case, you're just using someone. Right? And so that needs to be addressed. That needs to be corrected. All right? And then let me just say this too. The other night I had this conversation with someone who I'd asked this person, I said, How many close friends do you have in your life you could talk to? And this person said to me, I have none. I have none. And it just blew my mind, you know. And see, I think there might be some of you, you could possibly be in that same place where you'd say, Scott, I don't have any close friends. And I don't think it's probably not because you don't want to have close friends, but it could be because when the moment comes for you to open up and to be vulnerable, you become afraid. And like the defenses go up or the walls go up because maybe of a tough past or friendship, you know, or hurts that have happened in other relationships or whatever it might be. But can I just tell you something? God wants to bless you with some great friendships in your life. He really does. But at some point, you've got to be willing to take that relational risk if you're ever going to experience the beauty and depth that God wants to bring into your life through friendships. Now, let's talk about boundaries in our families. Our families. Now, if you think about it, our families are actually the very first place we learn about boundaries, right? Because I don't know about you, but if you got children like I do, I got three, outnumbered, yes. And right around the age of two, child learns one of these two words, yes or no, right? What's the word that our children seems to learn the most? No, right? Right, yeah, no. Time for a nap. No. No, right? Eat your food. No. Play with my iPad. Yes. Drop my iPhone on the concrete. Yes. Right? But it's mostly no. And of course, over time, what happens? Your child, they embrace it. They embrace that word, and they will grow to love that word, and they will learn to say that word with great joy. No. But parents, we don't like it, do we? Mm-mm. Nope. We want to wring their necks, right? We don't like it. And so oftentimes, what do we do? We say, don't you say that. I'm your father. Don't you say that to me. No. I don't want to hear that. Or what do? We punish them, right? You don't want to hear that. But listen, here's the thing. Listen. It's a kind of a different way of thinking about it. But parents, as much as we don't like to like that word, learning to say no, even as a child, is actually, I think, a very important part of learning boundaries in our lives. Because listen, in fact, the word, if you think about it, the word no is probably the most important boundary word that we could ever learn to say in our lives. And so as much as we hate it, parents, listen, as much as we hate it, okay, I think parents, our children need to learn to say no and that it's okay to say no. I'll tell you, this is a much larger issue than most of us realize, okay? Because here's what happens. This has a tendency to translate into our lives as adults. And in fact, there might be even some of you here today, and I've met people like this who they had that experience growing up. They could never say no. The minute they said no, it was like you're punished or something's taken away or like the feeling of love and acceptance was not quite there as much if they said no. And I've seen people, man, as adults, okay? And now they find themselves kind of walking through life the way they did as a child. And they're looking at all the important people around them, those in authority, those around them, and they're just totally preoccupied and constantly hoping or wondering, what do these people think about me? Do they like me? What's their opinion of me, right? And it begins to play out in all these unhealthy ways in their lives. It's like there's this constant pressure to say yes, because if I don't say yes, then I'm not going to be loved, or I'm not going to be accepted, or I'm going to somehow get punished for it. See, and I'll tell you what, living this way, it will ultimately keep your relationships from ever going to the beautiful places that God wants to bring them. And so I think maybe like one of the best things we could do is like to start taking baby steps towards being able to say no, right? Let's practice it right now, all right? No. Look at the person next to you. That's good, wow. I don't like you anymore. I don't like you anymore, all right? Right? Yeah, turn to the person next to you right now. Say no. Just tell him no, right? There's nothing your husband can say to you right now, right? Or wives, don't. They're in church. How crazy can it get, right? No. See, maybe someone asked you to help them with something or do some favor for them, and you know that you don't have the time. You know that it's starting to cut into your time with your kids or your family or whatever priorities you might have. And so for some of you, you just need to take that little baby step. You need to work that no muscle out a little bit more, right? And so anyway, back to our children need to learn to say no. But can I also say this? Our children also need to learn to hear the word no. Oh, I saw so many more nods that time. Yeah, because earlier when I said your kids need to learn to say no, some of you are like, I don't like that. And then when I said your kids need to learn to hear no, you're like, amen, preacher. Woo. Pull out the organ. Okay, let's have church here. Woo. Somebody. Okay, right? Oh, I can do it well. I haven't done it in a long time, right, Matt? All right, so anyway, listen. Our children need to learn to hear the word no, and I know it's not easy because kids do not like boundaries, do they? Mm-mm. They don't like them, but they need them so bad, right? And so our kids, they need parents who, with lots of love and lots of wisdom, can set boundaries and make sure that those boundaries have consequences. Listen, okay, sidetrack number 33, okay? Listen, parents, a real problem can show up in our families and in the development of our kids when we as parents take inappropriate responsibility for our children's problems. It could cause a lot of problems. For example, how many of you got kids at home, and especially this time of year, it's horrible this time of year. Our kids walk up and they do what? They're like, Dad, I'm bored. I'm bored. You ever notice like our kids, like they lose their bodily functions. They can't even walk. It's like, Dad, I'm bored. It's like, what the heck's happening to you? Like, do we go to the ER or something? Right? It's crazy though. Our kids say that all the time, right? I'm bored. No, you're crazy is what you are. And see, the ridiculous part about it is, like, this is 2011. You realize all the cool stuff that our kids had that we didn't even have when we were kids? I mean, like, I had ColecoVision. All right, our kids, see, you don't even know what that is. Atari, right? Our kids have, like, iPads, all these. Okay, so, I mean, if this was the 1700s, I could see maybe some of it. Kids saying, I'm bored, right? It's 2011, all right? And so, anyway, so here's what happens. Our kids say, I'm bored. And so what do we do as parents? We're like, okay, well, we start suggesting ideas, don't we? Well, you could do this. Right? You could do that. I don't want to. Right? You go play your video games. No. Right? You could read. No. God. I like that. Right? You could freaking stand still. How's that? Right? How about this? You go to grandma's house for 9 weeks. Maybe 12. We'll make it a seasonal thing. And our kids say, no, I don't want to do that. No. And so as parents, like, we keep going on the list. Option B, option C, option D. Next thing we know, we're at the flipping pet store buying like a dog and 5 cats. Right? Oh, how's this? Right? We come home, we got all these stinking animals, right? And then what happens? Well, you forget, like, the hamster, you leave it in the garage on accident. Not that happened to us, but it was just a hamster. So anyway, so all right, here's what I'm getting at. All right, if a child becomes bored, whose problem is it? Parents, is it your problem or is it your children's problem? Whose problem is it, huh? Blah, 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 right? You sound like your kids, right? No. The problem is your kids. It's their problem. It's not your problem. A child's boredom is not the parent's problem. And so here's what I think. I think when our kids come to us and they're like, oh, I'm bored. So I think you just say something like this. You know what? You know what, honey? That's a real problem, isn't it? But you know what? you have hit the nail on the head. You are brilliant, okay? You definitely know what you're dealing with here, which just shows me that you are one heck of a bright kid, and I have no question in my mind you're going to figure out a really great solution to that problem and then walk away. Listen, let me tell you why this is a big deal for real, all right? Mom and dad, if you constantly take it upon yourself to figure out every issue of boredom in your child's life, you know what you're doing? You know what you're teaching them? You are teaching them that their feelings of boredom is someone else's problem, right? And the problem with that is that he or she will could perhaps go through life expecting other people to make their boredom, their sadness, their pain, whatever it is, go away. And they'll never get clarity on the fact that what lies inside of my boundaries is my responsibility. It's a problem. And so, parents, some of you, the best thing you can do is go home this week and just talk about, like, what boundaries do we need to put in place when it comes to our children? Now, one more relational area I want to talk about. And that is, and this is huge, boundaries are absolutely essential when it comes to the relationship we have with God. Yeah, with God. So I'm talking about spiritual boundaries, right? And specifically what I'm talking about is how saying yes to God means saying no to anything else that gets in the way of following him. Saying yes to God means saying no to anything else that gets in the way of following him. No to temptation, no to sin, no to, here's a big one, no to myself, right? Saying yes to God means saying no to anything else that gets in the way of following him. And I'll tell you, can I say, part of the reason I think so many people's spiritual lives are so bland and so shallow and dull and surfacey is because of the tendency we have to want to follow God, but to also follow ourselves and our way of doing things. And I'll tell you what, I struggle with it all the time. I don't know about you. Can I tell you something? I have no problem doing things Scott's way. No, it's natural, right? It just happens. I don't struggle to do things Scott's way. No. But to do things God's way, it's tough. Not always easy. We see this all over the scriptures. Man, there are so many stories. In fact, you guys know Moses, Ten Commandments, right? Maybe you've seen the movie. So anyway, Moses goes up to the top of this mountain, Mount Sinai, right? He's up on top of this mountain, and God meets him up there, and God says, okay, we'll talk to you about some important stuff here. And he says, one of the things he says is, you shall have no other gods before me. I'm it, right? I am the only one. I am the God, okay? And I don't want you bowing down for any other gods. I am the God. Yes to me, no to all the other gods. So anyway, Moses is up on top of this mountain for like 40 days, and he leaves his brother Aaron in charge of everything. He's the high priest. And so he leaves Aaron in charge of all the people, and things start getting really ugly down below. Yeah. So let me show you real quick. Exodus 32, verse 1. When the people saw how long it was taking Moses to come back down the mountain, they gathered around Aaron. Come on. Come on, they said, make us some gods who can lead us. We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses. They call him this fellow Moses. Anyway, this fellow Moses, right, who brought us here from the land of Egypt, right? They're like, okay, hey, Aaron, we're bored, right? We're tired of waiting, all right? Who knows when God's going to show up and tell us, you know, what we can do, and we want some other god. Right? And so you have, you know, here you have God, no other gods, right? Yes to me, no to all the other gods, and I will be your only God, right? Yet the people are saying, no, we don't want him, we don't want to let him be God anymore, right? No, we want some gods that we can control. Right? We don't want to trust that God anymore. We want another option. Don't you think we do that in our lives all the time? Man, I think we have the tendency to do the exact same thing, right? It's like we want to take over the role of God when we're tired of waiting, when we're tired of trusting. you know what it is? It's a boundary issue, right? Because God's very clear, right? No other gods before me. He says, I am the God. Yet what do? We put our trust in all kinds of other things. Yet he says, no other gods. Yes to me, no to everything else. Or he says it this way to us, things like in Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not into your own understanding. Yet that's so challenging to do, right? We think about it. These people, we want a different God. Do you realize all Aaron had to do was say one word? No. Mm-mm. Nope. We're not going to do it. There's one God, and that's it. No way. We are not going to do it. Now, my guess is that there's some of you today, and for whatever reason, you have been waiting and waiting and waiting on God. And maybe there has been stress and there has been pressure. Maybe some of that is a result. Maybe there's been bad choices you made in your life. Maybe there's been unhealthy habits. And you are right now at that exact spot where you are struggling to trust God and you are ready to walk. Or perhaps some of you are right on the verge of saying yes to the wrong things. And you are about to say yes to something that has the potential to destroy your marriage, to severely bring havoc to your relationship with your kids, that could cost you your business, could cost you your career, could cost you your reputation. Maybe you're on the verge of saying yes to whatever, wrong relationships, sin, whatever it might be. Or maybe you've already said yes. Maybe you've already walked and you've already said yes to the wrong thing. Here's my question for all of us here today. Are you willing? No matter what, okay, no matter what you've done, no matter what you're thinking of doing, are you willing to not only say yes to God, but to also have the courage to say no to anything that might be standing in the way of following him? I think sometimes we focus a lot on the message of saying yes. We forget that saying yes also means there's going to be some things we have to say no to. So really, it's asking the question, am I willing to surrender? Okay, am I willing to surrender that, what is maybe that relationship, that business, that dream, that plan? Are you willing to surrender and to stop trying to control it and to stop trying to fix everybody around you and to stop trying to fix your husband or fix your wife and fix your children, whatever it might be, and are you willing to surrender and let God take it where he so long wants to take it? He longs to take it. I mean, just imagine living that way. I mean, imagine living your entire life like with this like one big, wholehearted, unconditional yes to God. And do you realize what he could do in your life? You live that way? Do you realize what, I mean, think about this. Do you realize what he could do, not just with a person like that, but imagine what he could do with 1,000 or 1,200 people like that, who lived with this constant posture of yes to God. I mean, imagine what he could do with a church, right? Imagine what he could do in our city with a group of people who enthusiastically said yes to God, but who also trusted him for the courage in their lives to say no to anything else that would stand in the way of following him. That's called surrender. And for some of you today, that's where it starts right there. It's just saying, you know what? It's time that I surrender. It's time that I say yes to the things that I should say yes to, and it's time that I say no to the things I need to say no to. Because remember, what did Jesus say? Jesus said, let your yes be yes, and your no be no. Let's bow our heads. Let's pray. God, I love that over and over again, you don't just tell us how to live. You demonstrate it for us. It's such a beautiful thing. And of course, that happened. I mean, one of the powerful ways it happened was by Jesus embracing humanity and becoming human, laying aside the privileges and everything else that came with being your son, and saying yes to us even when we were saying no. And the fact that you still said yes to us, you said yes to loving us, to forgiving us, to dying for us, even as we perhaps, even some of us ran from you, we tried to ignore you, we tried to push you away, yet you are constantly there extending your beautiful arm of grace in our lives. And so God, may we be people who live our lives with this constant nodding of yes to your promptings, to your plans for our lives. And at the same time, God, would you fill our hearts with courage to not just say yes to you, but would you fill us with courage to say no to anything that would stand in the way of us following you. And God, I want to pray for those of us who maybe we've recognized today some areas of our relationship, maybe in our families, our friendships, our marriages, our parenting, or even our relationship with you. And we've recognized that there needs to be some boundaries. And God, that always calls for maybe some uncomfortable conversations, or just some even coming to these realizations can be a tough thing. And so what I want to do is I want to ask you to fill us with your wisdom, and fill us with your strength, and fill us with courage. Now, would you just take a moment, just where you're sitting, and would you ask God to do that for you? I mean, don't let this be a moment where it's just me sitting up here praying this prayer, but would you just take a moment where you're at? Would you just reach out and ask God? And you maybe you're so new to this whole thing, and you're not even sure, you know, you're not even sure what you even believe about Jesus and all that, but would you even in that, even with the doubt or the concerns that you might have, would you be willing just to very simply just ask God, okay, God, I'm going to ask you for courage. I'm going to ask you for strength in my life. Just take a second and do that right now. And what I want us to do is I want us to close our time by praying a prayer of surrender that was written a long time ago by St. Ignatius Loyola. And I'm going to ask you to stand with me, if you would. And I want us to close. I think this would be such a beautiful way to close our gathering with these words right here. Such a powerful prayer. But let's leave. Guys, let's leave on this note today, and let's lift our voices and make this our closing prayer together. Ready? Take, O Lord, and receive my entire liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my whole will. All that I am and all that I possess, you have given me. I surrender it all to you to be disposed of according to your will. Give me only your love and your grace. With these, I will be rich enough and will desire nothing more. God, may that be our prayer. May that be the posture of our lives. And we pray that and we ask it in the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen.